Captain Gerry Roberts, it is an honour to be sat here with you, and please tell us of your time.
Fantastic to be back again. My wife and I have been back a couple of times, but there's such a lot of the atmosphere of Bletchley Park today. I was there from autumn 1941 to the end of the war, and my first job was on something called Double Play Fair, which was a fairly simple cipher system used by the German military police. The messages were pretty boring. They would say typically, Sergeant Schultz has been moved from Infantry Division 41 in Augsburg to Infantry Division 92 in Munich. Nothing terribly interesting about that, except perhaps to Mrs. Schultz. But that meant that we knew where those two divisions were positioned, and it helped to build up what's called the order of battle of the enemy. However, after 6 months, the three of us, there were three cryptographers, Dennis Oswald, Peter Erickson, and myself, and we were moved with Major Tester to work on Tunney. Tunney had been broken. This was in July 1st, 1942. And Bill Tutt had broken the Tunney system, which was a quite remarkable achievement, believe me. The machine, the Lorenz 42 that the Germans used, had 12 wheels against Enigma's 3 and 3 different enciphering movements. So it was very complex. And the Germans were totally convinced that nobody would ever break it. But luckily, they had an operator. He sent them a long message, 4,000 places long. And the guy at the other end must have been having his tea or something, and he missed some of it. So he said, send the message again. And the first operator sent it again and made two catastrophic errors. In the first place, he didn't change the wheel settings. So, in effect, we had what we cryptographers call a depth, two messages which had been enciphered the same way. Worse than that, he changed the text the second time, abbreviated some words. And this meant that it was easier for us to break. And a man called Colonel Tiltman managed to break these two messages and find out what they said. But he couldn't break the system. He couldn't find out how the actual enciphering machine worked. And of course, for us to do more work on traffic, it was essential to know how the machine worked. Anyway, the job was passed to a man called Tutt, Bill Tutt, about 23, 24 at the time, a graduate, in mathematics, I think, yes. And he worked on it. I remember how he worked, because for weeks I was in the same room as he was while he was working. It took him 2.5 months. I don't know whether you've ever stuck at the same problem for 2.5 months. 2.5 hours is about as much as I can do. He stuck at it and he steadily made progress and eventually broke the system. And one person this century has called it the outstanding mental feat of last century. And frankly, that's about the measure of it. And did it have any effect Don't take my word for it. General Eisenhower, after the war, said Bletchley Decrypts shortened the war by 2 years or more. 2 years or more. This was a war which cost 10 million lives a year. You can work out the sums for yourself. Tunney was quite different from Enigma. It was very much more complex, and it was ordered by Hitler himself to encipher messages between army headquarters in Berlin and the generals in charge of the huge army groups on the various fronts, on the Western Front, for instance, in Italy, before we liberated Italy, and in Russia, where they had three stations, North, Central and South. And it was, the first link was to Greece and Northern Africa, but it was such a good system, so secure, easy to use, that the Germans adopted it very quickly for all their messages. And it spread to all the significant places. We were breaking stuff, as I say, from the middle of 42 on. If I can give you one or two cases where the breaking of Tunney influenced what happened, which is for me the acid test, you know. You can say, oh, these people at Bletchley Park, brilliant, weren't they, you know, so clever. Did it make any difference? I'll give you a couple of examples. In 1943, remember Stalingrad in December 42, the Germans had tried to break through, and they'd only just failed. They very nearly broke through. And if they had done, that might have knocked Russia out as an ally of Britain and America. Imagine the consequences of that. But the Russians managed to hold out. The Germans made another attempt at Kursk, a biggish city about 400 or 500 miles southwest of Moscow. And we were able to tell the Russians, first, we warned them it was going to happen. Second, we told them how the Germans were going to attack. It was going to be a pincer movement. And third, we even told them what army groups were going to be used and what panzer units, especially important, the tank units. Because the tanks had played such an enormous part in the German success. Well, the Russians managed to fight off the Germans at Kursk. Just as well, because all those forces, if the Russians had not won out, would have been turned against Britain, almost certainly, because we were the only people left in the war, effectively, then, in Europe anyway. So that's one case where Tunney gave massive help. The second most important case, of course, is before D-Day. The really crucial thing to know was where the bulk of the German troops were being held. Was it up in the Calais region, which is what Hitler wanted? Or was it defending the Normandy coastline, which is what the German generals, being professionals, wanted? They could see that if there was going to be a landing in Europe, this was the more likely place. Not Calais, on those beaches you could land lots of staff and troops. So that's where the German generals thought we'd go. Quite right, of course. At all events, Hitler was the boss. He won out, and the bulk of the German troops were kept up in the Calais region. Not only that, but I think Hitler insisted on keeping them there for 4 or 5 days until it was certain that any attack in Normandy was the real thing or a diversion. Hitler had been fooled partly by stories planted with spies returned, but also because the British had made a large number of things which from the air looked like landing craft and moored these on the Kent and Essex coasts as though we were going to attack Calais. And Hitler swallowed it. Luckily, because if those troops had been located on the Normandy coastline, it would have been a bloodbath. We would have had a terrible time, or we would have had to rethink our whole strategy. And there aren't many places where you can do landings in Europe, you know. This was the obvious one. And we knew from the Tunney messages that this argument was going on, and we knew that Hitler had won it, and we knew that it was viable to go for the Normandy coastline. Just as well, because, I mean, they didn't walk in Normandy. It was very hard fighting. And with a much larger force on the German side, our landings could have failed. So it was very major stuff. And after D-Day, we had constant information about the movements of German troops as they made their way, retreated towards their own frontier. And we were able to take advantage of this a lot of the time, not all of the time. Montgomery missed the implications of one set of information, and this led to the semi-disaster at Arnhem, where we lost a lot of men. So there's a number of cases which illustrate how important the breaking was. The breaking itself, once Bill Tutt had broken the system, it was our job in the testary to break the daily traffic. And not just on the Western Front, the armies on the other Russian fronts and in Italy would use different wheel patterns, so we had to break all these as well daily, because the Germans, after a while, began to break, change the patterns daily. At the end of, I beg your pardon, they used to, but they would still send messages using the same encipherment, so that we still had our depths and we could still break those. We broke a very high proportion of those. I can't remember the exact figure, but it must have been well over 75%. Certainly in the last year and a quarter before the war's end and before D-Day itself, we were breaking 90%. This I can remember. And I'll tell you why. If we were unable to break a message for a day, that message would be put on a table rather sad pile, and then one of the other cryptographers would have a go at it and see if he could break it. Usually he couldn't, because usually there must have been something wrong with the message in picking it up. One impulse was wrong or whatever. Now this pile never rose. It was always a very small pile. And I'm pretty convinced that we were breaking better than 90%, because if you fail to break something, you'd be pretty depressed about it, knowing the implications. I can't remember that feeling of depression. And I'm pretty convinced it was a very high level.
What was the general feeling amongst the code breakers, senior or otherwise? What was the general feeling of the work that you were doing? Because not many people knew what was actually happening, what they were involved in. How did you feel at the time?
Well, it was obviously top secret. Top secret. To give an example, Tunny itself was only declassified in the year 2000. Enigma was declassified in the early 1970s. And so some of the story of Bletchley Park came out then. But Tunny, my wife and I have been married 17 years now, and I was not able to tell her. I told her that I had worked at Bletchley Park and what sort of work we did generally, but I couldn't say anything about Tunny. And it was only when Jack Copeland asked me to contribute a chapter to his book Colossus that I realised that it had been declassified, and I could then tell my wife, yes, I worked on Tunny, and explain something about the system and how we broke.
Do you feel that the secrecy and the level of top secret that it was has contributed to the lack of recognition that so many people have got? The lack of recognition that Bletchley Park has got?
Very definitely so. I don't say that as a criticism. I did think it went on too long. The government had its reasons, I suspect, because they didn't want the Russians to know too much detail about how we'd broken, because maybe other people were using those machines now, including the Russians, who knows? Because it's still a very advanced system. The Enigma machine was first on the market in 1923. So, if you like, by the time war came on, it was the sort of Ford Model T of the cipher world, whereas the Tunny was the 1940s Ferrari, you know. The atmosphere in the unit I worked in was the testory, and we did all the breaking. After about 15 months, they realised that how important Tunny was, and they felt they should have a machine to help speed up one of the processes of breaking the so-called Kai wheels. And at first, the rather inefficient machine called Heath Robinson was invented. And it was fairly useful, but we were still breaking a lot by hand until the end of 1943. And then the Germans pulled their socks up, tightened their procedures, and there were no more depths. Disaster. But our people were very creative. They found a different way of breaking. which in